You're with Big Ideas on RN, and now we turn to a downside of ever-increasing growth, the negative impact on our environment. Professor Richard Bernardi holds the chair in medical radiation science at the University of Sydney. At a TEDx Sydney event, he talked about degradable plastics and the elements they've traced in this material. His conclusion? It's hazardous waste.
Luxury. Luxury does not denote a material quality of the object owned. It denotes the quality of its possession. And with this thought taken from Jean-Paul Sartre's Being and Nothingness, I'd like to draw your attention to a peculiar cultural dissonance in our dealings with synthetic materials like plastics that we collect ever more consciously to recycle, extend their being, but also make strenuous efforts to make them degradable, biodegradable no less, in order to have them disappear in nothingness. Now, this somewhat highfalutin existentialist thought was tested when I joined a group of environmental grassroots activists and marine scientists who sailed on a small expedition along the coast of New South Wales to measure the level of plastic pollution in that area. And the person who challenged me most was Tanya, a mum from Burley Head, who had very successfully initiated a campaign to use recycled textiles, sew them into reusable shopping bags, and get rid of plastic bags. And she would ask, okay, I think we can probably use biodegradable, but is biodegradable the same as renewable? Or should we go renewable? But if it's bio-based, what about the water that is used? One question after another, it was really difficult. In that survey, we did in fact find pretty much what you find along most beaches, always worldwide. Bottle caps, plastic bags, balloons, textiles, and a lot of other stuff that we couldn't really identify. We do know, not from Kalbarra Beach, but similar beaches, that down to a depth of around 2 meters, we find more and more small, for the naked eye, no longer visible, degradation particles from plastics. And that is the reason why scientists are calling for plastics to be classified as hazardous material. And there is European legislation about that, and it affects an industry that in Europe alone occupies at least 1.5 million people. It's really a growth engine and a source of wealth. It's clear to me that, or I feel always, that plastics are potentially the smartest innovation since pottery. It allows trade, it saves lives, we can carry goods, and we can deliver services. It's just unthinkable not to have plastics in our lives. But plastics are compounded materials. So, is there anything one can do to have this Sisyphus task of sorting very complex materials? And the answer is yes. And there's nothing wrong with a little bit of nuclear physics on a Saturday afternoon. As you remember, there are 98 naturally occurring elements and I think 20 synthetic elements. They're still occasionally producing new ones. And these elements are either detected using a neutron source, and neutrons cause an event with the core of the atom, the nucleus, and then from prompt gamma you can determine the nature of the atom, or you use, as you probably know, a particle wave that you produce by an accelerator, such as the large accelerator, the Australian Synchrotron in Melbourne, and you again bombard the material, and you tune your wavelength to the object of interest, and that would be the atom. It's, in essence, ultra-brilliant light, and the trick is that the wavelength matches the size of your object. So we are quite capable to measure all these elements. Now, you may or may not have come across another use of these isotopes, and that's if the isotope or the atom itself gives off energy, by a small amount of radiation. You can use it for medical imaging. That's how I came into sort of the application of nuclear science and technology, because it allows you to detect processes at an absolutely staggering level of dilution. 10 to the minus 15 femtomolar. That's pouring one glass of wine into the whole volume of Sydney Harbour. And of course, if you do take a bottle, forget where you got it from, be careful. So the neat principle with this, what we call the tracer principle, is that it is scale-free in space. You can basically measure isotopic signatures in the universe right down to single cells. So the principle holds true. What you have seen as a medical application can equally be applied by measuring isotopic signatures in the environment. So plastics are not just one homogeneous material. If you cut cross-sectionally through the material, you see an incredible variety of chemical compounds and their decomposition stages. So it's really difficult to say what a plastic really is. Now, we were in this first study primarily interested in the atoms, in the elements within the plastics, the trace elements, the plastics that we looked into. So there are two plastics that have a lot of bromine. That's a bit of a pointer that this plastic was possibly treated with a flame retardant. Flame retardants are very toxic, so there's a toxicity related to the product in which the bromine lies, is incorporated. There's two strips with copper. I remember this was green plastic, so it's probably the dye within the plastic. There are other plastics who have arsenic. It may have absorbed the arsenic from the environment. And then there is plastic that has very high concentrations of lead, and that is clearly a hazardous material. So to cut a long story short, plastics are a compositional mishmash. It's very difficult to ascertain the risk of the degradation process if you don't quite know what is in these plastics. And the important thing is, so they are not only a source of hazardous material that they give off, they are also a sink, because as they degrade, their surface increases more and more, and they are highly adsorbent. So if they are in environments that have small amounts of toxins, they would accumulate and in fact become a sink and then a highly toxic source. Now, there's one thing I didn't mention. The plastics that we have been studying weren't collected on the beach. That was done by a bird, namely the flesh-footed shearwater bird. It's a migratory pelagic marine bird that migrates between the northern and the southern hemisphere and nests on Lord Howe Island. This is where the lead scientist, Jennifer Lavers from Monash University and the University of Tasmania, collects stomach samples and feather samples from their chest. It's technical. I don't know how she manages to simultaneously have the bird give up the content of their stomach and pluck a feather, but but it is a happy bird afterwards. So no birds have been harmed for that research. But the birds are being harmed by the stomach content, and it's not infrequent to find that about 10% of the bird's weight was made up by the stomach plastics. Now, we were interested in seeing, are the elements that I've just shown in the plastics transferring into the feathers? There's vanadium, chromium, titanium in the bird feathers. Now, I'm not making a comment currently on whether the health of these birds is impaired by the concentrations of these heavy metals, but we do know that this species is under threat. It's not a superabundant species, but it's also not an entirely rare species. In fact, it just lies between these two extremes, and having small reductions in a population like that usually hints to a larger problem. Now, as I said, we don't value plastic despite its many superior qualities. And I'd like to draw your attention that we have in the past hallmarked, in particular, objects of daily use. Not precious objects, that's not necessary if they are in a museum. Objects of daily use, by hallmarking them. In fact, for certain metals, silver, gold, and platinum, it is in fact compulsory. Could we do the same for plastics? Yes, we have the whole elemental table. We could admix into the plastic an elemental signature if we wanted. In fact, if we added a little bit of gold, just sort of 10 milligram per ton of plastic, it would be eminently traceable using neutron activation. So we could say certain certified plastics have that small amount of gold, and then they are traceable. We know the source. Or we could just sort of put our marketing hat on and say, maybe, as we know, it's not just the material value. Maybe we up the material value and we include into the material itself the currently externalized costs. Costs that we don't pay for, let's say the environmental impact. We could put an incentive fraction in so that people actually keep the bottle, make it a keeper. Or we could come, whatever behavioral economist may come up with, we could just change the material into a durable material. So the whole degradability idea may not work for that. It may not work at all. Now, there is a serious issue to it. We are just ahead of a massive revolution in our manufacturing practices, and that's distributed additive manufacturing or 3D printing. So the use of plastics, particularly recycled plastics, is going to increase massively in all likelihood. And we already know what happens if a big polluter is replaced by many, many small polluters. So small is not always beautiful, particularly if you cannot trace. Traceability is important to create accountability. And if you have no accountability, you can't achieve sustainability. You wouldn't even know what is the most sustainable solution. So trace the atom, trace the product, understand its true life cycle, and then you can come close to a decision that may achieve sustainability. Thank you.
That was an excerpt of biomedical scientist Professor Richard Banati's talk at TEDx in Sydney. That's it for tonight. I'm Paul Barclay. Bye for now.